Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So today I want to talk a little bit about what estrogen does to the brain as we move through perimenopause. If you're anything like a lot of women moving through perimenopause, myself included, you might be starting to notice some of the changes in your cognition, like losing your train of thought more easily, maybe struggling to concentrate like you used to. You might be forgetting what you were about to say halfway through a sentence. Completely just losing a word, just this, you know, there's a word for what you're trying to explain, but you just lose it. And then eventually it comes back. Walking into a room or into the supermarket with a full plan, and then suddenly just having no idea why you walked into that room or that shop. And that's happened to me numerous times. Feeling mentally foggy most days, struggling to get into a workflow the way that you used to, maybe. And so you're feeling less productive, less sharp, or just not quite like yourself mentally anymore. So if any of this resonates, I really want you to know that you're absolutely not alone. And this is definitely something that I have been struggling with in the last 6 months or so. It's been something that just crept up on me. And honestly, I think one of the hardest parts of these symptoms for a lot of women is that it can feel quite unsettling, especially if you've always been someone who's capable, organized, sharp, productive, switched on. You know, it can feel really hard. And a friend once said to me, she makes jokes saying that she's always been quite forgetful and struggled to concentrate. And, you know, she said, so these sorts of symptoms are nothing new to me. But she actually said to me, it must be really hard for you because you've always been mentally sharp. You've always been very cognitively switched on and able to just, she's always admired how I could just get into my workflow very easily and get loads done in the time that I need, the time that I have. And so she said, for you, it must be even harder because you're not used to experiencing these sorts of things. And now suddenly you're having to deal with them. And I thought, I'd actually not seen it like that. But it made sense because, yeah, that's exactly how it has been feeling for me, is just this real sense of unsettling. Like, what is this? I don't like it. And it's getting me down because I know how productive I used to be and can be or should be. And I just don't have it some days. And so, yeah, it can be really hard especially if you're just not used to it. So a lot of women start wondering, am I now becoming less capable? Is this it? Am I losing myself? Why does everything suddenly just feel harder? My work, anything I'm trying to get done with life, admin, why does it just suddenly feel so hard or feel like it takes up a lot of mental capacity? And like I said, I can really relate to this myself. And this last year or so particularly has just been a bit of a ride. But understanding what's actually happening inside the brain during perimenopause can be really reassuring. That's definitely what gets me through. It's not like this is happening and I have no idea why. Then I would really be worried. And then you're stressing yourself out even more because you're thinking about all these awful things it could be. And, you know, you need to get your brain scanned and all of these awful things. But because I know what's going on, it doesn't mean I just let it happen and not try to do anything about it, but it gives me that reassurance that nothing sinister, you know, there's nothing really to worry about as such, but, you know, just that understanding is more empowering and reassuring. So there is a very real physiological reason that these changes are happening. So today I'm going to talk about the role of estradiol. That's the most active form of estrogen that we make in the body. That's the one that actually does the work inside the brain. Most people think of estradiol purely as a reproductive hormone, you know, the one that we lose when we get to menopause, our ovaries make it in our fertile years. Yes, but it's also one of the brain's most important neurosteroids, neurobrain steroid. So it's a steroid hormone. But it's a chemical very important in the brain, much, much more than just a hormone. So estradiol directly influences the production and the regulation of several key neurotransmitters. So these are brain chemicals, including dopamine, serotonin, and noradrenaline. So these are brain chemicals that are heavily involved in things like motivation, focus, concentration, mental clarity, mood, stress resilience, attention and drive, and also our ability to relax. And estradiol also plays a big role in the hippocampus. So this is the part of the brain that's involved in memory formation and recall. And it affects areas like the hypothalamus and the amygdala, which are heavily involved in emotional regulation and the stress response. So when estradiol starts fluctuating erratically during perimenopause, remember it's now on a roller coaster, very high 1 minute, crashes down the next and so on throughout the day. And then later, in the later stages of perimenopause, starts to decline. The downstream effects of that on cognition can be really significant. And this is why so many women in their 40s, in midlife, describe feeling mentally slower, foggier, more overwhelmed, emotionally reactive, or just not like themselves anymore. And like I said, that's really, I do really resonate with all of that. And something I think is really important to acknowledge here is that this isn't happening in isolation. Perimenopause usually arrives during one of the busiest, most demanding phases of our lives. So many of us are also at the same time navigating demanding careers. We might be at the peak of our careers, navigating teenagers or younger children or anything in between, aging parents, maybe unwell, needing care, needing support, relationship pressures, poor sleep, chronic stress, and the invisible emotional and mental load that so many women carry. So your brain is trying to adapt to significant hormonal changes while also carrying this enormous cognitive load that we've got at this stage of life. And so it's no wonder that so many of us feel overwhelmed. But the good news is that there's many ways that we can support the brain during this transition. I talk a lot about how we can support the body through this transition, but I haven't specifically talked about the brain. So, of course, body identical hormone therapy and of estrogen, you know, through the gel or the patch, is absolutely one valuable tool. And for a lot of women, it can be transformative. But as I've said before, hormone therapy, it's all about the body it's going into, as opposed to just the hormone therapy itself, the gel itself. The body needs to be receptive to it and be able to detoxify it efficiently and break it down and you know, and so on, and utilize it. But that's another conversation that I've had in a couple of episodes ago. So yes, so body identical hormone therapy can of course be very helpful, and for some, like I said, it's very transformative for them. But either way, lifestyle-based strategies matter enormously as well, whether or not you're using HRT or will be using it or not. The foundational sort of lifestyle habits, they help to nourish and support the brain now and also for the long term, which is of course what we want to be focused on as well. So the first foundational strategy is movement. So exercise is one of the most powerful things we have for brain health. It increases blood flow to the brain. It supports the growth of new neural connections in the brain. It improves mood and stress resilience mentally. And it helps reduce neuroinflammation, brain inflammation that's associated with brain fog and cognitive decline. And importantly, when it comes to movement, it's consistency that matters so much more than the intensity of the exercise that we do. So this doesn't need to mean punishing workouts or obsessing over your step count. Simply moving your body every single day is what matters. It could just be going for a walk every day or a couple of walks every day if you can. Or moving around at home. You know, if you have sedentary jobs, if you sit at home, if you work from home, even if you work from an office, but like me, I'm sitting at my desk most days at home. Try to get up every 50 to 60 minutes. If you're in an office or at home, this applies. My Apple Watch reminds me, which I find really helpful, but you can also set reminders on your phone. You can use an app on your phone called Stand Up, and that buzzes off every hour telling you to stand up, and you can set it to say either stand up or you can set it to say something like do 10 squats, you know, if you're working from home. So stand up, do some squats. You can just do some general stretching. You could walk around the house, walk around the office, go and make a cup of tea, go outside for 5 minutes, do a couple of sun salutations, dance, put on a bit of music for 2 minutes and just dance around, you know, whatever you can do. Tiny moments of movement throughout the day really add up. And then, of course, nutrition matters enormously for the brain as well. So your brain is metabolically demanding. You know, when you've done a lot of work, study for exams or things like that, or if you've just had to do something that's very cognitively demanding, we feel exhausted afterwards. And we think, well, I haven't done anything physical. Why do I feel exhausted? But your brain is so metabolically demanding, and it needs a steady supply of nutrients for it to function well. So if any of those are missing or, you know, depleted, then that could add to that cognitive overload that we feel. So omega-3 fats, for example, are particularly important, especially DHA. So EPA and DHA are the omega-3 fatty acids that we find in, for example, oily fish. So things like salmon, mackerel, sardines, herring, trout, and they are the most potent, richest source of EPA and DHA. So DHA is one of the major structural fats that's found in the brain and the nervous system, and it's heavily involved in memory, in mood, in learning, and cognitive performance. Then you have foods like walnuts and flax seeds. They contain ALA, alpha-linolenic acid omega-3 fats, as opposed to the DHA and EPA. It's only the fish, oily fish, that provides that preformed DHA in a much more usable form for the body. So the ALA that's in flaxseed and walnuts can be converted into EPA and DHA, but it doesn't always work as efficiently for everybody. And you may not convert into enough of it that you might get in fish. And then choline is another really important nutrient for the brain. It's needed to produce something called acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter, a brain chemical involved in memory, attention, learning. And egg yolks are one of the richest dietary sources of choline and can be incredibly supportive for cognitive health. So it always breaks my heart when people say less and less people are doing this now. But it's this big trend to just eat egg whites. The nutrients that we need, the proteins in the egg white and the yolk, but those wonderful nutrients that we get, vitamins A, D, E, and K as well, and that choline is in the egg yolk. Protein is important as well because amino acids, which is what protein breaks down into when we eat it, these are the building blocks for making our neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin. And a lot of women unintentionally undereat protein in midlife. I talk about protein all the time. Anyone working with me or in my kind of community is now well versed on, you know, how much protein we should ideally be eating and how to get it, all their meals. But a lot of women are still accidentally undereating protein, and that can impact their mood, their energy, their focus, their resilience. So very important to be making sure there is that good portion of protein with every meal. Colourful fruits and vegetables also provide antioxidants and what's known as polyphenols. So these are various types of plant chemicals that help protect the brain against oxidative stress and inflammation. So it's really that brain inflammation that can cause those symptoms, the forgetfulness, the struggling to recall a word. If we can get a handle on that, that can make a big difference to those symptoms as well. So things like berries, extra virgin olive oil, herbs, spices, green tea, cocoa, real cacao, all of these can help support long-term brain health. And blood sugar balance is really important as well. So I talk about blood sugar balance all the time, but if we're talking about it in terms of the brain itself, big blood sugar swings throughout the day can worsen brain fog, anxiety, concentration, irritability, energy crashes. So building balanced meals with that great portion of protein, some healthy fats by way of extra virgin olive oil, your oily fish, avocado, coconut, nuts and seeds, and then making sure you've got plenty of fiber, some whole grains, vegetables, all the different colors, dark green leafy vegetables and colorful veg, herbs, spices, and then some slow release carbohydrates like baby new potato or sweet potato or brown rice or quinoa or buckwheat. They can make a huge difference. That balanced plate three times a day makes a huge difference to energy and mental clarity across the day. And hydration matters more than people realize as well. So even mild dehydration can affect concentration and cognitive performance surprisingly very quickly. You may have noticed this already. You may have tested this out for yourself, whether on purpose or by accident, that if we're dehydrated, it's very difficult to remember that word, to remember a sentence, to come up with ideas. And then when, or even the same when you're hungry, And sometimes, you know, when you just hydrate yourself, you suddenly can, you feel like a flower that's a weeping flower that's now, or plant that's now just come back to life after being watered, and you get your brain back. So definitely not something to overlook. And then sleep is another non-negotiable when it comes to brain health. Sleep is when the brain consolidates memory. It clears out the metabolic waste from the day. It regulates your mood. And it restores your cognitive capacity, basically. So protecting your sleep wherever possible, as much as possible, is so important. You know, obviously, if you're listening to this and you're someone who's just going through a phase at the moment where you're having trouble sleeping, or maybe you have a young child and it's stopping you from sleeping, then don't think you're doomed. Because hopefully as well, that is a temporary phase and you can do whatever you can to support yourself. Doing little things like if you're very sleep deprived, or you're just not having good sleeps consistently, on the days that you are sleep deprived, this is something I used to live by a few years ago, maybe about 10 years ago, actually, when I was really going through a insomnia stage, I would do a yoga nidra during the day. So midday, maybe around midday, 1 o'clock, I would lie down on the floor or on the bed, on the sofa, and do a 20 to 30 minute, however long time I had for my break, lying down yoga nidra body scan meditation. And that is so helpful. It's been shown to support brain activity. So, you know, if you're sleep deprived and you're worried about that in terms of brain, then do try to tap into the use of yoga nidra body scan meditation whenever you can. So when it comes to sleep, try to keep fairly consistent sleep and wake times across 7 days. You know, give or take an hour here or there is fine, but we don't want to ideally completely change that on Fridays and Saturdays, you know, like staying up till 3 a.m. and waking up at 10 a.m. Obviously, I don't think many of us in midlife are doing that at this stage, but it was something that I used to do, you know, in my 20s, early 30s. The Fridays and Saturdays was a completely different ball game. And then you can sort of end up with that feeling of being jet lagged until sort of Wednesday. But like I said, I'm sure many of us aren't doing that consistently these days anyway. Keep your bedroom cool and keep it dark. Use an eye mask if you need to. I certainly do. And I have earplugs, eye mask, the lot, mouth tape. And it really all does help me sleep really well. Address night sweats if they're disrupting your sleep. My next episode next week is going to be all about hot flushes and night sweats, and the fact that it's not just only a hormonal thing. There are other things, and we're going to be talking about that. So tune in for that. And support blood sugar and stress levels as much as possible too. So we've talked about that balanced meal 3 times a day. I've got plenty of previous episodes where I go into more detail about blood sugar and insulin resistance and stress as well, and managing cortisol. So plenty of those to tune into if you just look through all of the different episodes. Because stress management really, really matters enormously as well. Chronic stress changes the brain. It narrows attention. It impairs our memory, it increases inflammation, and it keeps the nervous system in a constant state of vigilance. And during perimenopause, a lot of women notice that their tolerance for stress feels much lower than it used to. Yes, definitely the case for me. So practices like mindfulness, breath work, just very simple breath work, like breathing exercise, I should say, as opposed to breath work, like the 4-6 breathing ratio. So you're breathing into a count of 4 and out to a count of 6. And you can set a timer for 3 to 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes if you have it, but even just 3 minutes used a few times a day can be really, really beneficial. It just brings that stress response down. It calms the nervous system, calms the brain. It's that form of mindfulness. And then gentle yoga and that yoga nidra lying down body scan meditation that I just mentioned, really, really helpful. Spending time in nature as much as you can, where you're actually taking in the sounds and the sights of nature, and nervous system regulation work. So, you know, anything that work, I mean, time in nature, yoga nidra, these are all very helpful for the nervous system, but even things like craniosacral therapy, that can be a really lovely therapy that if you have the budget for, I certainly try to do it every month. At the moment, I'm sort of managing maybe every few months, but it's definitely something if you can do on a regular basis, that can be very, very helpful for nervous system regulation. So all of these can have a measurable effect on stress physiology over time and have that lovely compound effect over time. So like I say, even just 3 minutes of the 4-6 breathing done a few times a day, day after day, week after week, month after month, can have a huge benefit to your stress physiology. And finally, connection as well. I genuinely think social connection is one of the most underrated protectors of long-term brain health. So isolation and loneliness has been shown to carry quite a real neurological cost. And midlife can feel surprisingly isolating for many women. If we don't have people around us who understand what's happening in perimenopause, what we're potentially going to be going through or are going through, and can hold space for us to, you know, to have these bad days and to get the support that we need, or to just be given a pass because we're having a bad day. Because I think the isolation is one thing as well, you know, not feeling like anyone is in your life that understands, you know, loved ones that are around you every day. But also it's when, if you feel like you have to continue to perform, you know, even if you don't feel up to having a conversation at that time or doing the dishes at that time or cooking the dinner at that time or whatever it might be, you know, you don't feel that you can just say, look, right now is not a good time for me. I just need to go and take 5 minutes, or I can't do this. Can you do it? If we don't feel that we can do that, then that can feel quite isolating as well. So please don't underestimate the value of seeing your friends, chatting with your friends, laughing with your friends and your loved ones, your kids, your partner, whoever. Having honest conversations, be honest with people. Don't, you know, when people say, how are you? Don't just say, oh, I'm fine, how are you? Just say, well, I'm not that great at the moment, or today's not a good day, or I'm feeling this, or I'm feeling that. I think we need to be more honest. Feel, you know, we want to feel supported. So if there's honest conversations that need to be had with loved ones, where they just need more knowledge for you to then to be able to support you. You know, hopefully we're not around people who don't want to support us and, you know, in negative relationships. Hopefully it's more of a case of, if you don't feel supported in your relationships, you know, friendships, loved ones, children, parents, whoever, colleagues, it's more that those people just need honesty from you, complete transparency, and for you to tell them what you need from them. And then that can allow them to support you and understand you and help you to feel connected. Go out for dinner with your girlfriends, your family, your loved ones. Prioritize relationships that make you feel safe, make you feel seen, make you feel nourished. Get rid of any toxic relationships or pull away from them. Definitely don't prioritize them. You know, any kind of negative relationships that you've got in your life, is there any way that you can pull back from those and come away from them? And I really want to leave you with this one thing. If your brain feels different right now, like mine, it doesn't mean you're lazy. It doesn't mean you're failing. It doesn't mean you're incapable. You're losing your mind or you're losing yourself. Your brain is responding to a major hormonal and neurological transition that happens during perimenopause. And at the same time, usually for most of us, carrying a huge emotional and cognitive load. And so that, I hope, helps you to understand yourself and have more compassion for what's going on. And importantly, understand and know that your brain is adaptable. It can be supported with the right nourishment, movement, daily movement, sleep, stress support, and understanding. Many women notice significant improvements in how they feel. You're not broken and you're certainly not alone in this. So for me, it's all about recognizing those days where my brain just turns to mush at a certain point in the day. And then knowing that this is my limit now today. I can't take on anything cognitively demanding from this point onwards. I'm going to need to delegate. I'm going to need to hand things over to tomorrow, you know, roll things over to tomorrow, do this at a time when my brain feels better and come away, take myself out in nature, or tell, you know, if I had a plan and I just don't feel up to it, tell that person, I'm not going to be able to do this today. Can we change things? Have yourself at the forefront of your mind, because for so many years we just don't. And so now is the time to really prioritize yourself, you know, not in a way that you're being selfish and you're hurting anybody else, just having yourself at the forefront of your mind. You know, what do I need right now or not need right now in this particular moment, because during perimenopause, our symptoms are chopping and changing and evolving and moving all the time. So therefore, goalposts are changing all the time. And what we need one day may be very different to what we need another day, in an hour by hour. So we have to be able to be malleable and flexible with ourselves. Just before I go, just want to remind you about the free quiz tool that I've got. If you want a bit more personalized insight into what your own body might need right now, you can take my free perimenopause quiz and I'll link it in the show notes for you. It can really help us pinpoint foundations and areas of your health that you might need to prioritize first off. You'll get your results and you also get some wonderful actionable tips straight away based on your own results. And of course, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is me, but you don't want to have to figure this all out alone, you want a community as you navigate yourself through the waters of perimenopause, you can work with me one-to-one, or you can come and join the Midlife Thrive membership, which is the community aspect. That's where we're all in it together. There's an online community, learning modules that you can work through at your own pace, and a monthly call which will probably be twice a month soon, but we all get onto a Zoom call and talk things through. So thank you for listening. I hope this has been helpful, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.